Ecclesiastes 7:14 says, "In the day of prosperity, be happy. But in the day of adversity, consider this: God has made the one as well as the other." So my question to you today as we begin is, do you believe that everything happens for a reason? And if so, is the supernatural world, either in the person of God or a devil, creating and controlling all of those things that happen in your life and in the world? Let's consider the story of the Old Testament prophet Jonah. You're familiar with the account, so I'll just summarize Jonah 1, verses 1 to 15. Remember, this is a fictional tale intended to teach an important truth. The name Jonah was not a given name like Bill or Bob or Jane. It's not the name of a real person. It was more of a title or a statement commonly used by sailors of the time to personify someone who brings bad luck. If you brought bad luck on a boat, you were a Jonah. It means he that oppresses or the destroyer. All right, one day a man called Jonah hears a voice that he believes is from his God. The voice that Jonah hears tells him to go to the city of Nineveh to pronounce God's judgment on the people there, along with an offer of forgiveness if they repent. Jonah doesn't want to carry out these instructions because Nineveh is the capital city of his people's most feared and hated enemy, the Assyrians. So he boards a ship heading westward on the Mediterranean Sea. A severe storm breaks out and everyone on board fears for their life. In the ancient world, nothing happened without a reason and a cause. Everything is either a blessing or a curse from the gods. So the sailors naturally assume that they are being cursed. They just don't know why. Eventually it comes to light that there is a person on board who has displeased the gods and must be removed from the vessel. "It is I," says Jonah. "I am the reason for the storm, and it is because of me that we might all die. I have disobeyed the calling of God, and the storm will only subside once you toss me overboard." After initially refusing to sacrifice a fellow passenger, the sailors rowed extra hard to try to get back to land, but the storm intensifies. At last they cry out to the Lord, "Please, Lord, do not let us all perish because of this man's life, and do not hold us responsible for innocent blood." So they did what any sailor would do. They picked up Jonah and tossed him into the sea, and the sea stopped raging. Simple logic. The sailors concluded that because everything happens for a reason, and because supernatural forces are in control to cause, or at least allow, everything to happen for a reason, then the reason for the storm was the displeasure of the gods with someone on board. And the author of the book of Jonah and other Old Testament accounts clearly agrees with this assessment of how the world works. Storms, plagues, famines, wars, droughts, floods are literally all acts of God. As we continue our series on racism in the Bible and Christianity, I want to take a brief detour today to a related subject that is quite often the cause of tribalism, racism, and even genocide. And that is the human tendency towards scapegoating, to assign blame to someone or some group who you are convinced is responsible for why bad things are happening to you or in the world around you. So in the case of Jonah, there was a storm. Everyone thought they were going to die, so there was fear. The crew found a scapegoat and acted upon it, and the storm abated. Cause and effect. First of all, it should be pointed out that this is the pattern of all storms. They arrive, they wreak havoc, they intensify, and then they disperse. And it is a fact that Mediterranean storms are frequently powerful cyclonic disturbances that are generally much shorter lived than tropical cyclones. The lesson of Jonah is primarily to instruct us that everyone, even the worst of us, is invited to receive God's forgiveness when we repent, number one. Secondarily, God has prepared good works for all of us to do, so don't run away from those opportunities when they're presented to you, no matter what kind of a calling it is. Jonah does not teach us that every or even any storm in life was formed by God, brought into your life to correct you. Nevertheless, in ancient times, nothing was considered to be coincidence or naturally occurring. Everything was divinely ordained and controlled. The danger is this: if everything has a divine cause, and it is up to us to find out what or who is triggering God to punish us with the plague or the forest fire or the attack on the Twin Towers on September 11th, then we will attribute some person or some group that we believe God's anger is directed towards. It was the 19th century Danish theologian Soren Kierkegaard who famously said, "Life can only be understood by looking backwards, but it must be lived looking forwards." Unfortunately, this often causes us to look back and find a supernatural explanation that is likely not there in order to explain events in our lives, if we believe that everything happens for a reason. Now, this may seem harmless, but it was the very reason that for centuries Jews were persecuted by Christians, because people across Europe were dying of plagues and disease. And it was concluded that Jews must be responsible, and so they must be poisoning the water somehow and killing Christians, because someone, some group, must be responsible. Scapegoating is the reason for the death of thousands of women accused of being witches by church agents, because intelligent women were usually the members of the community involved in herbal medicine and caring for the sick. So when disease was rampant and harvests were bad, or the rivers of Europe and North America froze over for months at a time, there must be evil or demonic forces at work, and it must have something to do with the devil working through female hosts and their potions. And so that tribe, or those others, must be eliminated to satisfy the anger of a just God. Now, it may make no sense to you today, but similar thought processes are still very common, even normal, especially in the evangelical community. In a Washington Post article from some years ago, two well-known Christian conservatives, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, suggested that homosexuals, abortion rights supporters, and liberal civil rights activists were partly to blame for the terrorist attacks that toppled the World Trade Center and destroyed part of the Pentagon, killing thousands. Ralph Drollinger, the Christian minister who led Bible studies for members of President Donald Trump's cabinet, wrote in a series of blog posts that coronavirus is God's consequential wrath on our nation, warning that whenever an individual or corporate group of individuals violate the precepts of God's word, he, she, they, or the institution will suffer the respective consequences. Robert Jeffries, another Christian minister close to Trump, echoed this idea by warning, quote, "All natural disasters can ultimately be traced back to sin," unquote. All natural disasters. One recent poll reports that some 44% of Americans, not American Christians, not American evangelicals, 44% of Americans say the pandemic that we're just coming out of is a wake-up call from God and signs of coming judgment. Because everything happens for a reason. In the 20th chapter of 1 Chronicles, composed approximately 300 years before the time of Jesus, the author describes a time of great plague in the land of Israel, resulting in the death of, it lists, 70,000 men. And I would assume a similar number of women and children. They're just not listed. 70,000, let's say up to 200,000 people had died of a plague. And plagues were not uncommon in history. And there were numerous natural causes for plagues. But since it was believed that all plagues were punishment from God, the author of 1 Chronicles needed to attribute a divine cause. It is said that King David had taken a census of Israel to determine exactly how large his kingdom was, and especially how large his army was. And for some unstated reason, God had told David not to do precisely that. And sometime after taking the census, a plague swept through the countryside and cities of Israel. And with a little, what I'll call, superstitious reverse engineering, the plague was attributed to God's punishment of David, inflicted upon the whole nation. A nation of people who had had nothing to do with David's decision. Philip Jenkins, in his excellent book, Climate, Catastrophe, and Faith, How Changes in Climate Drive Religious Upheaval, an excellent book, wrote that from 1560 onward, Europe endured some of the most brutal weather in its recorded history. The winters of 1564 to 65 beggared belief. Contemporaries listed the great rivers that were now frozen hard enough to become highways, including the Rhone, the Seine, the Thames, and Scheldt. When the ice melted, heavy flooding added to the general misery. These and other climate-driven disasters sparked conflicts and excited widespread popular terrors. Paranoia on a massive scale became a mainstay of European culture and of its religious thought. There's a direct correlation between events happening in nature and in the climate, volcanoes, earthquakes, floods, tsunamis, and the like, and beliefs about the end of time and God's judgment on people. When crops failed, he writes, when herds died, when plagues ravished the land, and when storms sank ships, the common and predictable human response was to find the malignant individuals or groups who were causing these phenomena and tormenting ordinary, decent people. When bad things happen, a cause and a solution must be found. And we must find the others to blame, the ones we don't trust because they are different, because they are other, perhaps even inferior in our view. And this is a root cause, not just of tribalism, but of racism. And when Christians attempted to stigmatize, restrict, remove, or destroy heretics, Anabaptists, witches, Jews, or any other group of people, they were guilty of the worst forms of human behavior. Now, I'm well aware that across the globe, tribalism and racism was and still is often expressed among every culture and nation. ethnic cleansing, genocide, racial and religious segregation, and persecution is not a Christian problem. It is a human problem. I'm also aware that Christians have on many occasions been on the receiving end of such treatment. And many Christians have worked tirelessly to replace this kind of evil with love and acceptance. And we'll get to some of that later on when we talk about the reformers of slavery, etc. But we cannot overlook the fact that not only have Christians for much of their history sanctioned racism and tribalism, but they have found a pretext for it in the scriptures. Depends how you read them. Let's look at one more example. 2 Samuel 21, verse 1. It says, during the reign of King David, there was a famine for 3 successive years. That is a very, very big deal in an age where there's no canned Campbell's soup. There's no jars of pickles on some shelves that you can pull out on year 2 or 3. Food is perishable, and if you don't get new food this year, last year's food spoils. So David sought the face of the Lord, and the Lord said, it is on account of Saul, the previous king, and his blood-stained house. It is because he put the Gibeonites to death. So Saul put the Gibeonites to death in history. So now today, you're experiencing a famine for 3 successive years. So God is punishing everyone? And this isn't just a slap on the hand. This results for many in death because of what Saul did. When we tend to think that God spoke to people in the Old Testament, we often think he was having a personal, audible chat with them. Like God sat down on the rock next to you and said, hey, how's it going? Hey, by the way, let me tell you something here. Let me pass on some commandments to you. Let me share some bad news or some good news. And then when Jesus came along, God stopped chatting with people because no one since that time has said, well, there's some crazy people that have said, but no sane person has said, God sat down and talked to me. I don't think that's how it worked in the Old Testament. There's no reason to believe that God spoke to people in the Old Testament times any differently than he speaks to us today, in our spirit, in our thoughts, in our sense of inner being. We quote-unquote hear his voice calling to us, and sometimes it's in our imagination, or in our conscience, or our memory, or our hopes and dreams that are talking to us. In other words, we wish for something, or we look for a divine explanation, and often we don't see clearly, and we construct a conclusion that makes sense to us, one that gives us a sense of peace and comfort. It is so naturally human to want to understand what is happening in our life. Now, of course, the fundamentalists will say that God performed the litany of plagues and famines and wars as punishment for Israel's sins. But these accounts were written centuries after the events they describe, as Kierkegaard said, looking backwards, trying to explain why they happened. And they were mostly written during or just after the Babylonian exile. And in that mindset, we can understand why they would write these things. These cautionary tales were written to, A, explain why Israel was repeatedly being taken into captivity, as they're just coming out of another one. And B, to instill fear into the Hebrew people, to remain faithful to their Torah law and their covenant commitments. Why? To avoid future suffering. Sufferings which they believe to be the punishment from God. Now, of course, all of these events, whether pestilence, famine, captivity by an invading army, are all events that have a completely natural cause. If we today read the Old Testament stories literally, then we're likely to also attribute coronavirus and inflation, and high interest rates, and climate change, and the war in Ukraine as all punishments from God. And we must also, or may also, support the idea of identifying the sinful people or people groups. And they must be punished in order to lift the curse. In the case of the Christian church in the Middle Ages, the obvious cause of pestilence and starvation and death were witches, Muslims, heretics, and again, Jews. If you believe that coronavirus and inflation and high interest rates and a war in Ukraine, on the other hand, have natural causes, because we have knowledge of how these economic and political and medical events are triggered, then you will understand how the Old Testament writers misunderstood the world around them and the role in the world that God played, because they lacked that understanding that we have today. So what can we learn from this period in church history? Well, you may remember that the first in this series, that I mentioned that the root of most racism and tribalism is fear. Fear of unfamiliar people. Are they friends? Are they foes? Are they enemies? The more they're like us, the more we naturally trust and accept them. The more different they are from us, the more we fear them and mistrust them. There's the fear of an unseen spiritual world and a concern about some never-ending spiritual warfare, always on the brink of breaking through in your life, threatening your eternal salvation. Fear of the end of the world, global diseases and pandemics, wars and ones that end in mutual destruction especially. Fear of aliens for some people. Climate catastrophes and the need to root out the individuals or the categories of people whose sin has forced God to punish us all. I want to close with 1 John 4:16 to 18, and I'll read this from the Message. 1 John 4:16 says, God is love. When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God and God lives in us. Can it be any more simple? Why is this not the core foundation, the central beating heart of the Christian church? When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God and God lives in us. He says, this way, love has the run of the house, becomes at home and mature in us, so that we're freed of worry on judgment day. Our standing in the world is identical with Christ's. There's no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear. Since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment is one that is not yet fully formed in love. There's your solution. There's your next step to take if you live in fear. If you live in fear of others, or if you live in fear of God, or if you live in fear of the end. One life that lives this crippling, fearful life is one not yet fully formed in love. The profound solution to racism, tribalism, and scapegoating is love that does not live in fear of others or of God. Love that is not consumed and obsessed with the end, but gives of itself to enrich and strengthen the lives of others now, today, and celebrates where possible the earth we share. Love that is quick to receive and offer forgiveness to those who have wronged us, rather than stagnate behind the walls and barriers of past hurts. And love that does not need to continually be right and will accept those with opposing views. Next time we'll address the doctrine of, or attempt to at least start to address the doctrine of Christian racial superiority, manifest destiny, colonialism, and slavery, all within 20 minutes.